The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. I'm Pete Ledovitz here with my ever effervescent co-host, a man who, unlike normal people who order their donuts a half dozen, a dozen, or if you're a little racy, a baker's dozen at a time, he orders his donuts by the coulomb, Bill Hunt.
Hey, how you doing?
Only electrical engineer would laugh at that.
Yeah, well, if you got... You get all charged up about donuts.
And good. Yeah, you've been thinking, wow. Thinking about that since last night?
Yeah, I've been sleeping on that one.
Excellent. Yeah. But we'll explain what a coulomb and many other bases for units are today, because today we're talking about everyone's favorite topic in science technology, units.
Well, it is one of those things where, you know, it kind of helps you understand what's going on in some unit systems, not in the English one, the British system, but because none of it really makes any sense. They might as well call them quinces and quartuzis
or
something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just weird stuff.
Are you bashing the English system?
No, I would never do that.
So obviously one of the topics we will tackle is the metric system, ladies and gentlemen. Supposedly in various sectors of the United States society, we have switched to the metric system decades ago.
Right.
But we'll talk about the metric system, why it's a little bit easier. I've got all the prefixes, too, the one way past PETA and all that.
You did?
So yeah, I've got them on that sheet of paper, so we'll talk about that. And
I would also like to encourage people to call if you got questions about units. A lot of times there are things like you go to the doctor and they just give you a number. Your cholesterol is,
you know, mine's for you, 288.
No, mine's like 380 or something like that.
It's a miracle he's alive.
It's an ACC record, they tell me that, which is, so I've got that going for me. But anyway, feel free to call in. It's 404-894-2468. And I wish it spelled something neat or obscene. 894-2468, but I can't.
But call in despite that.
Call in spite, or if you've got an idea for what we could say these letters, these numbers mean, you know, that'd be good.
All right, always fishing for something a little strange, aren't you?
Yeah, always.
All right, so before we get to that lively the ultimate cool topic, I think that's what we called it on the website today, or your calls and comments. Bill, you've got a few Science in the News articles?
Yes, I do. Thank you for asking. So this one's from San Francisco. Again, the International Herald Tribune, the International edition of the New York Times. The fig tree and the philodendron are the first things that meet the eye in the repair bay of luscious garage in San Francisco. Go figure. Two Priuses come into focus, one slightly dented rear door, the other on a lift, two tires off and a rusty brake motor's exposed. Then comes the eerie sense that something is missing. Grime. So basically this is a garage in the Bay Area run by Carolyn Coquelette. And what she's doing is taking Priuses and getting rid of any gasoline-powered aspect of it and putting more batteries in. And for $6,000, your car will go a whopping 15 miles.
And as an engineer, I got to say, I'd recommend just buying an electric car.
Yeah.
I just remove the internal combustion engine. That's an expensive process. You need one of those big floor jacks.
I just don't understand California. I guess that would be a way to put it. That you would spend all this
time. I used to live in California. What are you saying here?
You know, just saying. But, I mean, why spend $6,000 to get a golf cart? Just go buy a golf cart.
Or one of these electric commuting cars. Even GM's coming out with one in the next year or two. I believe it's called the Volt. So, and it gets, I can go round trip to work with it. So I'm excited. It's a little pricey. I heard numbers close to 40K. Hopefully that's going to come down. But if you just commute with it, I would use it.
Yeah, I think we ought to go to public transportation, get that beefed up. That would be good. The other one is the challenges of eating right on a limited budget. So these two high school social studies teachers, Christopher Greenslate, 28, and Carrie Leonard, 29, a married couple, they looked, and apparently around the world, the amount that people spend to eat per day is a dollar a day. And so they tried to eat in America for a dollar a day. Fruits and vegetables weren't an option, so they'd have oatmeal for breakfast every day, peanut butter and jelly at lunch, and then rice and beans, make their own tortillas. They couldn't afford bread. And they couldn't stand at the end of the month. They were ready to, like, eat a strawberry or something like that. Their point was, I guess, they were trying to say that, you know, this is very difficult to eat on a dollar a day. And I would say that in rural areas, you're catching fish, you're killing rabbits, squirrels. You're
consuming the neighbor children, things like that.
Eating minnows out of the creek. I mean, you know, you're not just going to the grocery store and spending a dollar to feed yourself. You're actually going to be growing your own tomatoes and this, that, and the other. So it's sort of a flawed study, I would say, if you will, to
it wouldn't be the first flawed study we discussed on this program.
No. And then the third one, which was really kind of weird, this was a couple of weeks ago, October 26th, from a strip of Scotch tape x-rays. So these group of researchers at UCLA, in under high vacuum, ultra-high vacuum, they had Scotch tape and they peeled it off and detected x-rays emanating from the Scotch tape.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is radio, and it's a good thing, too, if you knew Bill and I, but you're giving me a look like...
Well, I mean...
An incredulous look, like you do not believe the results of this
right,
study.
Right, well, there's that, and then there's also, you know, if they just waxed my back under high vacuum, I can't imagine the
that's
number,
scary.
I can't imagine the subatomic particles, you know, that would come off.
I'm thinking both hadrons and leptons from that one.
Right, yeah. Anyway, so that was it. So that's kind of a weird one.
I mean,
one.
So who did this study? Is this like Vern in the garage, or were these two reputable scientists?
Seth Putterman. Now, first of all, I'd change my name if not. My name was Seth Putterman, you know, and I was a professor of physics at UCLA. I'd change it to, I don't know, Seth Gardner or something like that. Anyway, but yeah, so it and turns out there was an experiment back in the 1950s in the Soviet Union where they discovered the same effect, but everybody ignored it. Go figure. But it doesn't happen in atmosphere. You don't generate the x-rays with peeling the Scotch tape. I don't energetically understand it. Do you chemically?
So let's think about it. X-rays. So everything, you know, in the, you know, radiation spectrum comes from some energetic transition. And X-rays are usually generated when you take a low-level electron, a very inner shell electron, hit it with something, typically another electron.
Or a piece of Scotch tape in this case. Well, go ahead.
Perhaps. And you know, promote its energy way high up, right? And that energy difference, when it comes back down, emits a very high-energy photon, an X-ray photon.
Again, I don't understand how Scotch tape can do this.
Well, but, you know...
Does it work with other 3M, a post-it note, maybe?
Let us not make fun of Scotch tape, because there's an ASTM testing standard, right, for adhesion on things where you score something. You scratch it, and then you put Scotch tape on it and see if it comes off your silicon wafer. So who knows what happens with this sort of thing?
Yeah.
Now, why it occurs in a vacuum and not air, obviously, you know, air might quench the phenomenon, right? That's it might absorb the energy somehow.
I don't understand the phenomenon. I mean, could you have a surface interaction between Scotch tape and metal that
locally
would
you're
yank
doing,
on one of the electrons, the adhesion's
doing,
so strong.
I don't know. And that's what makes it interesting. But here's the interesting part, is that it probably is not a relevant practical phenomenon, because the number of electrons or the number of photons you'd get out of there would be really, really small.
Right.
And that means it might be at the limit of detectability, which is how we got into this whole cold fusion mess in the first place. Right. The neutrons were so small, it was actually part of the air, and this may not be. So
right, and so, you know, I don't know. I'm skeptical, and they didn't say enough in that article.
As you always are, ladies and gentlemen.
An article in Nature, so maybe I should go find the article in Nature describing.
Yeah, and it's not published in Nature unless they had a reasonable protocol, things like
that.
Yeah.
It just sounds kind of wacky from an energetic.
But there's all sorts of weird phenomena that can happen at material interfaces. So
yeah, but again, I would donate my back hair to science if it would mean, you know, more efficient X-ray machines.
All right. You're stalling, basically. You're stalling because you don't want to jump into this fascinating topic of units.
No, I'm okay. I'm ready. I'm ready for units.
All right. Well, we said we'd define Coulomb. And before we define Coulomb, let us remind our listening audience that if you, too, are as fascinated by the topic of units, give us a call at 404-894-2468. Before we even define Coulomb, we should actually talk about why units are important. And that's because You know, if you report a quantity or calculate something with a quantity and you have the wrong units, you can be off by large amounts.
Right.
A good example would be right here in Atlanta, just a year or two before the 1996 Olympics, we had a steel worker, construction worker killed because someone had a unit conversion error incorrect in one of the light support towers. And this giant truss of lights fell and actually killed, unfortunately, a construction worker. So his family and friends believe units are very important. Another good one is there was actually a metric to English interconversion of units that was responsible for a mistake many, many years ago. I guess it was less than 10 years ago when we crashed $180 million probe into the surface of Mars.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so
tell us about that.
Yeah, so I don't remember all the details. I remember it at the time. Now it's just a cheap joke in my stage act.
So what was it? What part did they miss? The gravity of Mars? They assumed.
No, I don't remember exactly what it was. But think about it. You know, metric to unit conversions. If you're going between pounds and kilograms, kilogram is 2.2 pounds. You're up by a factor of two. You might have built in a 35% safety factor in your design, but not necessarily a factor of two.
Right.
So you can be way off.
But, you know, part of the thing with units is if you work in some area of science or engineering, you get a feel for something based on the units. Like
right.
You'd say, so if, you know, you've got a load-bearing member that will sustain, you know, 2 tons, if you don't have any feel for what 2 tons in, you can't sort of look at a truck and go, whoops, that,
right.
You know. That can't pass, you know.
Right, and tons is a good example of a fairly robust unit because in the English system, it's 2,000 pounds. In the, you know, the metric system, it's 1,000 kilograms, which is 2,200 pounds. So it's close. I mean, it's just within 10%. So you don't make huge mistakes with tons.
Well, it gets to be the other thing of, I don't know why the British can't be consistent. They've actually... I think, gone away from their own units. If you're in England, the distances are in kilometers.
Yeah, everything's metric, right?
But here it's in miles.
But think about it. This is so important that actually all these horrible standardization agencies, well, ASTM does that, but the ISO 9000 certification.
Well, what is ASTM?
I always forget. You're an electrical engineer. Don't you do more of those tests than we do? I'll find it. I'll find it during the break.
I mean, I know what the – I don't know all – I'm not an – all-knowing
I thought you
acronym,
were omniscient.
Acronymologist. You know, I don't know all the acronyms.
I looked up the Mars rover thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were sent these measurements for maneuvering in English units, and they were expecting them in metric units, and so they just used them. And it sent the thing about 60 miles off course, this claiming a suicide course through the Martian atmosphere.
So it came in at the wrong angle and burnt up?
Yeah, because they were expecting the units in one thing, and they got them in another, and no one checked.
Wow.
But this is one of your pet peeves. So rarely do they print the units out.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, you know, 47.
Right.
So your cholesterol, what was it again? 3 times 10 to
350? 340, yeah. It's pretty, very, it's frighteningly high, you know. But, they sort of, that's one where it gets to the point where they go, well, gee, it's 340. You know, I'm asking you. I don't know what 340 really means.
It always varies.
You know?
So whenever you get blood work, right, it has to be an amount in a volume.
Well, this was they just scraped some sludge, you know, some.
Oh, right. So your blood was actually like silly putty.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So it has to be some amount. And usually those amounts are pretty small. So they're not grams. I mean, a gram, you know, is about, what, the weight of a half a paperclip or something. It's very small. It's usually milligrams, a thousandth of a gram. Or even micrograms, usually per some volume. And believe it or not, they use kind of an archaic measure, a deciliter, a tenth of a liter.
All right, well, let's back up a little bit. So we got two, well, maybe three broad classifications. There's the MKS, which stands for meters, kilograms, seconds.
Seconds, right.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
meters, kilograms, seconds.
So
everything
distance,
is based on those.
Mass and time. And the smaller version of that is CGS, centimeters,
grams
seconds. And there's some logic to this, like a cubic or a gram is the weight of a cubic centimeter of water.
Right.
At, you know, 20
at a certain
degrees
temperature,
C or
4
right,
degrees
temperature
C
or something like
that. Yeah.
And so that all makes sense, and you have everything sort of powers of 10 like a kilometer is 1,000 meters, or 1 nanometer is 1 billionth of a meter. And so there's a sensible approach to all these kinds of things in the MKS and CJS. In the English units, it's kind of weird. So you still use English units for some scientific things that you would use, right?
Like, do we?
Well, horsepower, don't the MEs?
Well, but I know that's only an industrial scale.
They're back in the last century anyway. So,
and we mentioned this International Standardization Organization, ISO 9000.
Right.
Those try to take many of the ASTM testing standards and make mm-hmm. them completely standardized. So if you use ISO, 9368 mm-hmm. tests to test, say, the viscosity of a polymer, mm-hmm. you know that it's in a certain size cylinder with a certain weight, and you've waited 10 minutes to collect how much polymer came through, and that tells you how thick it is. And that's what ISO 9000 compliant means, that you have everything standardized that way, and there's none of this problem you mentioned before about units coming through from Mars in the wrong units.
Right. Well, that's only part of ISO 9000. They also have
that's
quality
correct.
Standards for mm-hmm. how you do things, mm-hmm. and they really just test your procedures.
Right.
They don't test every single thing that comes out of your factory.
It is more than units. But right, so you mentioned the ease of using the MKS system. I mm-hmm. mean, oftentimes called the International Scientific System, SI mm-hmm. units, also right. called the metric
right.
system.
Right.
Is you have a basic mass, a gram, you have a mm-hmm. basic time, a second, and you have a basic, distance, a meter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then everything is just a power of 10, usually mm-hmm. factors of 3 powers of 10. So you start with gram, second, or meter, and you go up to 1,000 of those, a kilometer. Mm-hmm. In between, they still use hectometer, still a lot. That's
really?
100, yeah.
I thought that was a superhero.
Maybe in the comic books you read
right, yeah.
Hectometer Man, I don't know.
Yeah, Hectoman,
and then
yeah.
there's an outdated one that's 10,000, that's Myria, that I just found out, that nobody uses. But then 1,000,000 is Mega, 1,000,000,000 is Giga, 1,000,000,000,000 is Tera. People see Tera mm-hmm. now because you can buy a terabyte drive mm-hmm. for like $150 now.
Right.
It is. And we used to talk about gigaflops and teraflops in computers. So that's, a 1,000,000,000 or 1,000,000,000,000 floating point operations per second. Now mm-hmm. we actually have computers that are petaflop computers. And it just sounds like pedophile. I laugh every time I hear that.
I think the Catholic priests came up with that unit.
All right, there he is. Always going blue early in the show. Then beyond that, so that's 10 to the 15th. So that's what, a quadrillion. Mm-hmm. Then a quintillion or 10 to the 18th. Exa. Then comes Zeta and Yoda.
And so we'll have to express the national debt in those higher order
yeah,
terms.
Yeah, actually. So, for example, the mass of the Earth is 5,983 yoda or yottagrams. So it's a really big number.
Yodagrams?
Yes. So, all right, I'm not going to do any cheap Yoda jokes. So then when you go
below, the mass of 1 yoda or 1,000 yodas. Or
I mentioned before that when you get blood work done, often it's, say, milligrams or micrograms per deciliter. Deciliter is... And liters of volume. So let's actually use that. So that's a 1,000 cubic centimeters is a liter. So that's a tenth of a liter. Or so a decigram would be a tenth of a gram. Centigram is a hundredth. Milligram is a thousandth. Then comes micro is a millionth. Nano is a billionth. Pico is a trillionth. Femto is a quadrillionth. So 10 to the minus 15th. That's basically the lifetime of a quantum transition. Mm-hmm. So when you make an X-ray, that X-ray jumps up and back down in of order a femtosecond.
So like then some scotch tape, for example?
Well, yeah, apparently you're pulling it very fast. Yeah. Atto, zepto, and yocto go down to 10 to minus 24. I'm sorry.
Zepto after one of the Marx brothers.
Yeah, it sounds like
brothers.
The Marx brothers.
I didn't know he Harpo, had a I had no idea he had a unit
Harpo,
named after him.
Zeppo, right. Atto, zepto, yocto, I don't know.
Who knew? Yeah.
But the point is, it's ease because everything is a factor of 1,000.
Right.
Up and down, so you never have a problem.
However, in the English units, which the English don't use anymore, you've got a foot, which, 12 inches. So the smaller unit is 1/12 of that. A yard, the bigger unit's 3 times that.
Right, and a mile is 5,280 feet, and what is it, 1,760 yards?
Right, and an acre is 4,840 square yards.
Right.
Oh, my Lord.
So interconversion is the key to the metric system, and that's why scientists like it.
Right, and it's a lot easier to kind of think about scales of things, 10 times more. Part of that, what that plays into is that in engineering in particular, I often say that the art of engineering is being able to figure out what you can ignore. So if something is 1/100th of the strength of a different force in a particular problem, you can ignore it. You know, you could basically...
Right. Especially if it's complicated and you don't know how to deal with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if it's that small, if it's a small fraction, but, you know, can you neglect a foot when you're talking about a yard? Well, I don't know.
Probably not.
You know. But I mean, so the English, plus the English units don't mean anything by the names, like the BTU, the British Thermal Unit, which I don't know how that relates to calories. I can't do the cross
conversion. Yes, I try to ignore BTUs, but it's a standard thing. In air conditioning, the amount of heat you transfer is measured in tons, not the mass. There's an air conditioning unit called tons, and it's so many BTUs or joules or calories, transferred, you know. But like you mentioned before, so let's take a simple one like a joule, right? So a... let's say calorie, actually, right? So joule...
Well, a calorie. Calorie is
That's not actually a standard unit, but
amount of... It's not? So the one calorie is the amount of heat it takes to raise the temperature of
water,
a cubic centimeter of water by 1 degree.
Yeah, and I think
centigrade.
It's at one atmosphere pressure at 4 degrees to 5 degrees. But let's face it, if you're doing it from 9 degrees to 10 degrees, it doesn't vary that much.
So then it's a unit that makes sense and that's relatively easy to remember.
Right. And keep in mind, though, that when we say calorie, that's exactly what Bill mentioned, raising one cubic centimeter, which is a really small amount. That's also a milliliter, a thousandth of a liter. So if you've ever seen that in a syringe, that's what a syringe holds. It's very, very small. The calorie that we talk about with regard to food is 1,000 of those. So it's technically a kilocalorie.
Now, hold on a second. So I'm going to ask you to explain me. So I've you can tell from looking at me, I've never counted calories.
I concur.
Yeah. And you saw me, we had dinner. Can we give a plug to Alfredo's? It's a really cool restaurant.
No.
They're not going to guess. We can't do that. We can't mention that we ate
radio,
at Alfredo's.
But we can mention that they didn't throw you up, which is a plus.
Yeah. great place in Cheshire, Drug. Anyway, but where was I going with this?
Something about calories.
Oh, calories. So what, I mean, you know, is it energetically how much that would get? I mean, what are you doing when you're counting calories?
Oh, okay. So you're actually counting the energy in the food, right? So measuring that,
like
that's
if
a
I
tricky
made an
business,
atomic
right?
bomb, you know.
Yeah, it's essentially yield.
Out of the cheese whiz.
Right. So it's essentially yield. And part of that goes to the energy to run your body. Part of it goes to the heat you produce. And
but it's not equals MC squared. It's, I mean, how do you...
Oh, no, you don't... So it's basically the difference between all these carbohydrates and oxidizable materials when you take them in, and then when your body actually oxidizes them, converts them to carbon dioxide.
So what would you have to... So
it's a chemical reaction, not a nuclear.
I've got a Snickers bar.
Yeah, okay. You know,
am I going to figure out how many calories that
how
is?
To
set
measure
it on fire?
That. Yeah, see, you know, there was that one Simpsons cartoon where he sets a donut on fire. But what's the principal's name? Donalinger? And Homer's like, oh, it's so young. And, you know, he's like, and by the bright flame, you can tell this is a particularly sweet donut. I don't know if that's how they do measure it, but that's not how they should measure it. Because it's the energy difference between, you know, the carbohydrates and other molecules as they come into your mouth and then what they are when they're done, right? So you will oxidize these things into carbon dioxide. Yeah. You will break them down.
Let's
not
talk about what they are when they're done. But,
well, yeah. Unfortunately, the nitrogen doesn't go anywhere, so it comes out as tertiary amines, which are not
particularly
pleasant smelling compounds.
But it seems like a lot of assumptions have to get made.
Yeah.
Right?
So here's the thing. When someone says this donut is this many calories, they base that on standardized conversions of the ingredients in it. That's not the most exact thing in the world. But the thing to keep in mind is it's not when they say you have a diet of 1,200 calories, it's not 1,200 grams of water. And by the way, that's another standard. Mm-hmm. One cubic centimeter is about a gram in density. It's 1,000 of those. And it's confusing because they call it a calorie as well. It's really a kilocalorie, but they give it a capital C. So the food calorie is 1,000. That's heating a liter of water up by 1 centimeter. So it's a lot more than you think. And I've never quite understood how they convert those things. So there's tremendous inaccuracy in that. I guess the point I want to make is that some things just don't have units. Some things are just a number, right? So you have a pair of shoes, you have a dozen donuts, you have a score of something if you're an aficionado of Abraham Lincoln. 20, right? Mm-hmm. A gross is 144.
Right.
But there are some things that are just numbers. So, for example, Coulomb. Mm-hmm. Coulomb's a measure of charge, and right. there are some weird standardized ways
to do
that.
The other thing about, so the charge on an individual electron is 1.6 times 10 to the minus 19th coulombs. One coulomb of charge is an enormous amount of charge.
Right, it's 6.24509629152 65 times 10 to the 18th electrons.
Yeah.
Or positrons, right?
That's the positive version. A huge number. So, that would kind of raise the question: is how did we end up with a unit that's so nonsensical? And you're always going to be dealing with a fraction,
right? But that came from something. That came from something. You're an electrical engineer; you should know that.
Shouldn't I?
But we're not going to cover the history. We're going to talk about the science. So,
But
here's the nice thing about the
units: don't know the
a coulomb per second is an amp,
current.
And then, you know, a joule, right, mm-hmm. which is approximately one quarter of a calorie. So that's the way to keep track.
Right.
A joule.
Okay.
And a joule has another standardized measurements involving doing work with the mm-hmm. joules experiment, basically.
Right.
But a joule is about a quarter of a calorie. And a joule, which is mm-hmm. an amount of energy, so a joule per coulomb mm-hmm. is voltage.
Right.
So that's how much energy mm-hmm. you can get out of a coulomb. And they always say that it's not the... it's not the voltage that'll kill you. It's the current.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, you know, a micro coulomb, a millionth of a coulomb flowing through a wire, mm-hmm. a very, very small amount, it could have thousands of volts.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll shock you. You will feel very uncomfortable mm-hmm. by that, but it will not kill you. But it's lots of an amp of current.
Yeah, and I guess where it is, too, like, I mean, you could take a lot more voltage across the surface of your body than you could if it was the electrodes were connected to your heart.
Right.
You know,
right.
just for example. So it's just the resistivity of this.
But in addition to a coulomb, one thing you need to understand a lot of these medical processes mm-hmm. is another thing like a dozen or a score is a mole.
Mm-hmm.
And a mole is the way we think about molecules, right? So molecules mm-hmm. are small. So if you want to say a dozen molecules, that doesn't amount to anything. What you do is you say you have a mole of molecules. And a mole, let's see, is the number... it's called Avogadro's number,
right.
and it's the number of protons or neutrons. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm not going to split hairs about subtle mm-hmm. differences between those. That weigh 1 gram.
Really?
And that number is 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Huge number. If you have that mm-hmm. many neutrons, that weighs 1 gram.
So, you've basically got too many neutrons if you've got that many
yes.
neutrons. That's just way too many.
Yes, we have no neutrons.
Give some,
very
to, your,
fascinating
give some
book
to your neighbors.
You get,
give some to your neighbors
chance.
If
so,
you get that many
if
neutrons.
You think about it, a hydrogen atom is one single proton.
Mm-hmm.
We ignore the weight of the electron because it's really, really small. And one proton, basically, if you have a gram of hydrogen, you have 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. So all it is a number. And whatever the molecular weight of something is, mm-hmm. right, so that a carbon atom has... a total, of 12 neutrons and protons combined. So if you have 12 grams of carbon, you have that many, a mole of stuff. So mm-hmm. every once in a while, some of these units you get back from medical tests will be moles per liter or kilomoles mm-hmm. per deciliter, something mm-hmm. like that. And that's literally a number of molecules, which you can look up mole on Wikipedia. Chemists mm-hmm. are so geeky about this. There's actually a mole day. All right, let me see if I get this right. 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Is it... June 2nd at 2300 hours, something like that. They actually define it based on the number, and this is really why
it's a wild
way too much free time on our hands.
Is it a wild
look
party?
Look at Mole Day. And
June 2nd, get ready for the party.
Yeah, something like that.
At 2300 hours.
I don't know.
Man.
All right, well, so is there a wacky unit in electrical engineering that drives you guys nuts?
Well, there's several that I can't. So one of the things that is nice about the MKS system is that the units kind of mean something, and you can start to understand what they are. Like you mentioned, a coulomb per second being an ampere. I mean, ampere was or amps. An ampere was a 19th century French scientist involved in early kind of electrical engineering kind of thing, so it's named after him. But coulombs per second tells you, you know, its amount of charge flowing past some point.
Right.
In a second. So it's the velocity of charge moving, the rate of change of time of charge moving through. And so you hear amps enough, you kind of, okay, well, that's current. But then they have other ones like ohms.
Which is resistance.
Right. That's resistance, and that's voltage over current. And they used to call, and it was, the symbol was a omega, capital omega. Mm-hmm. And the reciprocal of that, or one over that, is conductance, and they would call that used to call it Mohs,
opposite of ohms,
MHOs. So it's sort of backwards ohms, and it was an upside down omega. But when I was in college, they changed that to Siemens.
You know, is Siemens a guy? I know it's a company.
It could be a guy. It is a guy.
It is a guy. And it's also a large
German scientist. But I'm still calling it Mohs.
All right, we're community radio. Can we advocate a unit system? Is that? Yeah, sure.
We can take a...
Okay, we can't endorse a candidate.
Don't
we
tell people to measure in it, but you can endorse it.
Can we in course? We can do that. We can endorse it.
Yes, the MKS system, ladies and gentlemen, the official unit measurement system
of inside the black box.
Yeah, and with that... I think we'll have to take a quick break here and prepare for the veritable plethora of callers who want to address this fascinating topic.
Or about parental units.
That too. So give us a call at 404-894-2468. If you too are as fascinated by units as Bill and I are, you're listening to Inside the Black Box on WREK Atlanta.
This is Friction. Friction Wednesdays, 10 p.m. on WREK Atlanta, 91.1 FM. Jazz. Just Jazz, weekdays, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. WREK, Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
How's your lunch?
Good, Dad, but not as good as the sandwiches you used to make.
Really?
Sure. Remember how you'd melt the cheese first and dry the pickles on a paper towel so they didn't make the bread soggy? Oh, and then you'd cut it into four pieces with no crust?
I did all that.
Geez, Dad, how would anyone forget something like that?
You never know which moments will be the ones they'll remember forever. So take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box. And did I hear that public service announcement correctly, Trent? That was the United States Department of Health and Human Services advocating not treating your dad like crapola. Is that
I believe so, yeah.
Sweet. So for dads everywhere, I think that's good.
I like that, yeah.
So I'm going to welcome you back to the special post-election edition of Inside the Black Box.
Well, we haven't once
units.
Mentioned the
As public radio, we are not allowed to endorse a candidate. But I will say this. 2 months ago, we did remind our listeners that according to the official Democratic platform, they were going to increase the budget of the National Institute of Health. Actually, Institutes of Health, right? There are several. The National Cancer Institute and the National Science Foundation. And a former program director at NSF, with whom I discussed this, who shall remain nameless, says, yeah, that'll happen. Right. But the Republicans made no such promises. So we're going to hold the Democrats to
that. Well, plus there were a lot. The
I hope they do
Republicans
that.
Lost quite a few seats, both in the House of Representatives and
right, so
the
I'm looking
Senate.
For a budget increase.
So, yeah.
For fundamental science.
Yeah.
All right, so before the break, Bill was extolling the virtues of what is now our official unit measurement system, MKS units, right? Meters, kilograms, seconds.
Right.
And the beauty of that is 90% of everything you want to deal with, except for things like measuring charge and measuring amounts of molecules, come from those things. So, for example, velocity, meters per second.
Right.
Right? And then you take velocity
or
squared.
Or acceleration when you're dropping off a building is
meters per
second
squared. Which in gravity is what?
9.8,
right. So meters per second squared. So that's G. That's the gravitational acceleration constant.
That used to be my rapper name, G.
Until one day you
Before
used too much
to
hair gel and it was all over. That's your new name now, right?
Yeah, okay. Right, right.
So, right, so that's acceleration. You take velocity, meters per second, square it, multiply it by mass, and that is energy, right? So
right.
Let's get that right. Kilogram meter per second squared is a joule.
Let's see.
He's thinking. He's thinking.
You've
his
got
eyes are
meter squared per second squared.
Right, and if you take that and
you need an extra meter there. That's what
oh, did I say kilogram?
Staring.
Yeah, so kilogram meter squared per second squared is a joule.
Yeah.
You're correct. And if
kilogram
you
meter per second squared
is
a
newton, which is force.
Yes.
So newtons, joules, kilograms, meters per and seconds. You have just about everything.
Right.
And that's it.
And sometimes with the F and the femtonewton, people think that's fig newton, but that's wrong.
Oh, it's not?
It's not a fig newton.
All right, there you go. Yeah. So what's nice is you can build a consistent set of energy, force, density units, right?
Well,
you can
look at units
cubic meters,
and see if you've gotten the right answer.
Kilograms per cubic meter, things like that.
And I think it's important. You kind of saw it a lot with that movie Apollo 13, where units were a big deal. Those guys wouldn't have made a meter to, English units conversion error because they were checking and rechecking everything.
Right.
So, I mean, part of it, it's really good practice to kind of, you come up with an answer and go, well, does this make sense? Is this the right, voltage? If I'm going to do an implant for a pacemaker, there's pretty big difference between having 50 millivolts show up across the muscle tissue as opposed to 5,000 volts.
Yeah,
50,000 volts would be a big difference,
And in chemistry, if ever you're off by a factor of 10 to the 23rd, that means that mole conversion was totally incorrect.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, so we care about units, but the average person doesn't, right? I mean, say that unit conversion error.
I think it'd be good to learn more. Like I say, I mean, I'm in denial about my cholesterol, so, I don't even know what the unit really is or what it really means, or I just know there's a certain value. But then they don't really tell you what that is. They give or like when your child is born, it's what, an Apgar score or something like that?
Right,
they're already giving him a test.
How vigorous the child is.
They're already giving him a
test.
That's
a qualitative
right
test, though.
Yeah.
Right, and I forget, what's
but
the highest
a score?
Is it 10? 10 is the highest Apgar score.
Yeah, but it's
if you're a nurse, give us a call. Correct us on this one.
But they give them a score.
And if you're, just barely hanging on, you're like a 2 or a 3, and if you're better, you're like a 5 through 8, and if you're a 10, you're screaming as you come out the door.
Right, well, your wife's a nurse, right?
Yeah, so she explained this to me once, but I forgot it.
She would know. But,
I forget a lot of things she tells me, much to her chagrin. All right, so let's talk about your cholesterol, actually.
Okay.
So whenever you get this blood work done, right, you get this – have you ever seen this printout? And it's got everything from calcium ions to cholesterol and, low-density lipoproteins and things like – and vitamins and all sorts of things. So whatever that is, whatever that number
is – use MSBs for me, mini sausage biscuits.
Oh, that's it. Well, that would be an equivalent.
They see under the microscope. They see the –
That's got to be a concentration, right? So that's got to be either a mass per volume, and it's okay to use volume because, blood, when they test it's at one atmosphere. Even when it's getting pumped, it's only slightly above one atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Water is considered, which is the main constituent of blood, incompressible, doesn't change too much. So it's got to be, grams per liter, and like I said, when they test you, for example, for glucose or certain other things, it's usually milligrams per deciliter. right? So, for example, if you have fasted, that means you haven't eaten since the night before, 70 to 90 milligrams per deciliter, right? So that's 1/10 of a liter is the volume, milligrams 1/1000 of the gram. That's really small. Or less than, what is this? So this is kind of interesting. So you can either do it in mass, or you can do it in the number of molecules. So they say the equivalent is 5.5 millimoles per liter. So 1/1000 of a mole. Mm-hmm. And glucose, let's see, that's a hexose, 3, I don't know what the molecular weight of that is. It's probably of order 100. And that's the conversion. So if you have 100 grams of that, you have 1 mole. So it's either number of molecules or mass. And the interesting thing is if they ever tell you 12% by volume, that's not exactly true. So, for example, you get a bottle of wine, which I'm guessing you do on a regular basis.
Yeah.
It'll say something like 12% alcohol by volume. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that 12% of the volume, when you look at the bottle, is alcohol.
Why not?
It means when you separate the two, 12% of the volume is alcohol. The remaining percent is water and whatever other stuff is in there, which is mainly water.
Back up. So why is that not?
Well, the reason is because when you mix two liquids together, you don't always have the same volume at the end.
Okay.
So volume, you always have to measure separately. That's kind of weird. And we have a caller, Trent?
Yeah.
Is it the authorities trying to get us off the air?
Absolutely not this time, actually.
Hi.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Trent?
Yes.
I'm a diabetic, and I use a machine that uses milligrams per deciliter.
There you go.
I think if... I guess what I was calling about was the fact that if we could manufacture more of these devices, people could control their diabetes better, and we could have an industry based on medical devices. But do you think that this is a commonly used equation, or is it something that requires learning advanced metrics?
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I think, you know, that's a very good question, because a lot of times the units should give you something that are... So what's a acceptable... I'm not diabetic, so what's an acceptable glucose concentration for you?
Well, it doesn't... The machine gives you a number. It doesn't give you... it gives you a number between, like, 70 and 180.
Okay.
Right, and after eating, you should be between 70 and 145. So if you're way up there by 180, that's saying you may have too much.
So 70 is sort of a reasonable thing to be thinking about, or 100 or something like that. But if you change the units to micrograms per deciliter, you'd have 70,000 or 100,000. So it's just a matter of, you know, the units being something that it's a decent number to remember. So if you changed the units to micrograms per, you know, femtoliter or something like that, it's an outrageously different number. So you kind of, for something like this, I think you do want a number that people can go, okay, 70 or 100. I can think about the ratio of the two and the difference in the two. So I think milligrams per deciliter is good, and it's probably what's
it's
used
irrelevant
a lot, right?
As long as it's a standard use.
Mm-hmm.
So,
can you all talk about where I know you're doing a show today on a certain topic, but could you do a show in the future about medical technology and how
absolutely.
It might be an industry that people could go into?
Mm-hmm.
And show states that have invested in biotechnology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a good
Absolutely.
One.
Absolutely.
You know, and also some of the... that's a great suggestion. Some of the aspects of that include, like, Food and Drug Administration approval for certain things, how long that takes, you know, and so that gets into the business proposition. So you could come up with some great device, but depending upon what it is, it may be years before it gets approved and used. And I'm not knocking the FDA at all. They do a great job to protect us, but it's a long... The business proposition is very different from
Pete coming up with a new polymer hair gel for me and selling it next week, you know, for example. So
approval is much more long and
drawn. Yeah, right, exactly.
All right,
exactly.
Well, we appreciate the suggestion. I think that is something we'll do in the future.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
So let's try and put that in perspective, right? So let's actually look at the units. And the point is, the units don't matter. You choose whatever you want as long as you're standardized.
Well, but as an engineer, they need to make sense, right? So if I'm driving in my car and I'm talking about, miles per hour, that's sensible that I'm going to go 60 miles in an hour. But putting my speed in terms of, you know, centimeters per second and having some, you know, 10 to the sixth kind
right,
of thing.
Right, the magnitude of the numbers really
it
large.
It doesn't
really
make
small.
Any... It,
yeah, that makes sense.
The logic of it is just lost. You don't go, well, right. what's this unit mean?
But, I mean, let's see if we can figure out what is... So 70 is the lower end of the glucose you should have in your bloodstream. Let's think about that. So 70 milligrams. So a gram, again, your typical office paper clip weighs about 2 grams. So half of a paper clip, that is really small. Then you're going to divide it by 1,000. And let's say 70 to 99 is the fasting range. So let's call that 100. So 100 thousandths of a gram is 1/10 of a gram. So you get 1/10 of a gram, which is a tiny thing. This is like a few crystals of salt. And that is dissolved in a deciliter. Now, a liter is what? A little more than a quart.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
So a deciliter, 1/10 of a quart. So you've got, you know, a coffee cup. Right? So think of a few grains of, you know, sugar dissolved in a coffee cup. That's relatively small.
Wow.
So it gives you a perspective. It's not like the lemonade you made where you poured, you know, 2 cups of sugar or a cup of sugar.
It also gives you...
It's not like
you,
that sweet tea you drink.
Hammering on my...
no, I'm not knocking your tea.
I gotta make some choices.
I'm just saying, but sweet tea orders of magnitude.
Right, right.
And by the way, that's another favorite term of scientists, orders of magnitude. It means powers of 10, basically.
Right, and in certain fields, like in electrical engineering... You would neglect certain effects, again, if it's 1/100th of the strength of that. But in, electrophysiology, for example, you might neglect something that's just 1 factor of 10 or less than a... You say it's sort of a negligible effect,
right,
but it's
right.
actually, you know, if it was a device, electronic device,
right.
you'd be very
If it's easy to include it and it's 10%, you do it. If it's hard to include it and it's 10%,
well, know. There's that aspect, too, but I wouldn't really talk about the...
Let me pick on one of my pet peeves, and that is international units.
Okay.
International units. This is a measure literally of a mass or a mole equivalent of some compound. Mm-hmm. And when you buy vitamin E, for example, comes in a package in a little capsule.
Which Pete buys an awful lot of vitamin E, but go ahead.
No, I don't buy a lot of vitamin E. I'm not falling for that
joke.
It was
Viagra before Viagra,
It is a good antioxidant, so I do recommend it. But so one international unit, and it varies. So if it's vitamin E, vitamin C, insulin, they're all a different amount. It's usually a certain amount of micrograms, right? So a millionth of a gram. So it's a very, very small amount. But it's defined differently for everything, and it's supposed to define a biological equivalent. And let me show you how complicated this can get. I looked at 3 sources, and I couldn't find an error in this statement, and it appears to be that one international unit of vitamin E is the biological equivalent of 2/3 of a milligram, so 2/1/1,000th of a gram of D-alpha-tocopherol. And that's what vitamin E is.
I can't even begin to understand what you're trying to say. What are you trying to say?
The D means it's a particular symmetric version of that molecule, dextrorotary, right? So either 2/3 of a milligram of just the dextrorotary one, which actually makes no sense. Apparently, whether or not it's levorotary or not may not make a difference for biological activity.
We will now have the Pete to English translator come in. I think what he's talking about is that different molecules have... There's sort of a right-handed and left-handed forms.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so these...
Some are active and some are not.
And these have very markedly different biological processes.
Right.
For example, thalidomide, when that problem hit in the 60s, it was
that you had a so-called racemic
mixture.
Means
well, it wasn't a sedative. It was supposed to help keep women from...
getting morning sickness during pregnancy.
And turns out that in some small number of cases, the... left-hand form or right-hand, I can't remember which, the one form of the molecule would be very good at, you know, controlling...
morning sickness?
Morning sickness, and the other one would cause these horrible birth defects.
Right, and this gets even more complicated because you can either have 2/3 of a milligram of just the D form, that mm-hmm. symmetry, or 1 milligram of a mixture of the DL form, but it's not alpha-tocopherol, it's alpha-tocopherol acetate. So that includes the weight of the acetate negative ion that's with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets really complicated. So whenever you see IUs, you can't just look at that thing and tell what it is at all. You actually have to look up what the definition
is. Can I talk about some of my pet peeves, which aren't nearly as complex as that? I'm a simple guy. Light years, it's not time.
Oh, yeah.
Light years is distance. Okay.
And that is the distance that light goes in a year. So you take 186,000.
4 minutes with her is like 5 light years. No.
186,300 miles per second. Multiply that by 3,600 to get it per hour times 24 times 365.25 per year. And that's the distance.
I can't understand why people call you a nerd. I don't really understand.
I accept that.
Yeah. So that's one of my pet. So that's not time. It's distance. Another one is that. And there are all these kind of examples. A 2x4 is, a piece of lumber, which is 1.5 inches by 3.5 inches. Why not call it a 1.5 by 3.5 instead of a 2x4? Was it ever actually a 2x4?
I don't know, but they shave a half inch off the dimensions until you get to 8. And when it's an 8x8 or a 4x8, they only shave off 1/4 inch. So explain that one to me. And the same thing with wire gauge and needle gauge.
Huh?
Wire gauge and needle gauge. The bigger the gauge, gauge 20 is actually a really tiny wire or a tiny needle. So if ever a nurse wants to stick you with, someone says, a 20 gauge needle or something, 20 is small, 2 is big. You want the small needles.
Well, it's gauge just like gun shells.
Yeah, same thing, right? So 12 gauge versus 20 gauge, 12 gauge is a bigger diameter barrel, right? There you go.
Another one, these are few in sports, a 20-second timeout. How long is a 20-second timeout in basketball? If anybody knows, please call in, because it ain't 20 seconds.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
They call a 20-second timeout, and one would think, logically, that between when the coach calls the 20-second timeout and they're back out, playing would be 20 seconds. It's about 40 seconds, actually.
Whereas in hockey, what you spend in the penalty box is
what you spend in the penalty box. Just call it a short timeout or a long timeout.
So the take-home lesson here is units can be confusing because
if you stick to what it is instead of just making up stuff. The other one, and this gets to, it's
so
sort
this,
of.
This is the rant show for Bill.
It is.
He's ranting.
And feel free to call in 404-894-2468.
We're almost done with the show.
And
apparently,
chime in and join me.
We're not
join
as
me in this march against 20-second timeouts.
But we try to be cutting edge and edgy, ladies and gentlemen.
But the other one is vertical leap. So, they'll talk about athletes, particularly basketball players, having a vertical leap. So I looked it up. Michael Jordan supposedly had a 48-inch vertical leap, and he was 6'6". I am 6'2", and so my understanding about the vertical is it's flat-footed, not running jump, just flat-footed. How high can you jump? I can flat-footed touch an 8-foot ceiling, so if I had a 24-inch vertical leap, I could touch a basketball rim. And 48, I would get my lips on the rim. That's just me.
Which that is your goal, actually.
That is my goal. I've been working on that, working out at the gym very hard on that. Michael Jordan, being 4 inches taller than me, would have an 8-inch bigger reach in terms of the time he's standing. So he would be able to get at chest level. Mm-hmm. Flat-footed. I don't think he really did that.
Don't they let you bend your knees in that, though? So
yeah, they do.
For 48 inches,
you can bend
your
knees and jump.
It's not like
your
head's that much higher.
No, it is.
Oh, it is?
It is. They're not counting from...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how they actually measure.
It's the tip of your hand touching. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I just don't think 48-inch vertical is really 48-inch vertical.
Right, but you're not really arguing with the units. You're arguing with the quantity.
Exactly. So I'm arguing... Well, it's, you've got... You put inches after it, and you call it a 48-inch vertical leap, and then you start, how do you do this?
It would cut it almost
down. And then you start looking at it, and you go, well, this can't be right. It's more actually a very common – I was talking to a guy who played basketball in college and kind of helps a lot of the guys locally. He said, usually it's really just 28-inch vertical is common for flat-footed jump up. I mean, if 6'6" guys had 48-inch vertical leaps all the time, you'd see plenty of guys just stand in the paint, jump up, and get chest high on the rim. Doesn't happen.
So you're doing a sort of a sanity check.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
right, and that's yeah. how you do it, right?
Right.
You would see him touching the top of the backboard.
Oh, all the time.
Okay,
but nobody does.
All right.
So it's just that
me.
the unit's different. The other thing is that a lot of times.
But if that were centimeters, then you'd be about right. That yeah. is about 28 inches.
Yeah. So I'm very skeptical about that. That unit, that measurement, rather. But Michael Vick is theoretically, or is listed as being 6 feet tall. He's not 6 feet tall. So when they measure a lot of these players, the height they give is not the height they actually are. I don't know if it's like they put them in elevator shoes.
Well, how tall is Michael Vick?
I think he's like only like 5'10 or 5'9. 6 feet tall.
No, but he can't be. Then he'd be like Doug Flutie. He couldn't see over the line.
He can't see over the line.
He can't?
No, that was one of his problems.
I mean, he was not to engage Bill on these.
Not a good quarterback. I mean, he couldn't really
Wait,
see.
Michael Vick? I thought he was a good quarterback. Dogfighting aside, I thought he was a pretty effective quarterback.
Not really. But but I mean, a lot of you'll see this with a lot of the guys that they'll they'll have a quoted height that is off by.
Okay. So is this just I'll go back to bitterness over nerdy guys can't jump. That's it.
No. No, I'm just talking about, you've got a unit. This is extrapolating what units are to how they get used. And you go, well, here's this unit, a 2x4. Well, call it something else. Call it, board number one or something like that. But, you sit there and you would think that a 2x4 should be 2 inches
but by 4 inches. That's convenience, right? So plumbers, for example, talk about a schedule 42-inch pipe. And it's not a 2-inch pipe. It's a 2.5-inch outer diameter. And then the inner diameter varies on what schedule it is. The bigger the schedule, the thicker the pipe. So none of these things are standard. And maybe that's one of the things we
Well, they are
conclude.
Standard, but the
but the well, they're standard,
standard
but they're not
is,
what you call them.
Yes.
Yeah, but you just have to deal with that.
Like
you're an engineer,
20-second
man.
Timeouts.
All right, we've reached the end of our program, and what have we learned? I think we've learned that units, while fascinating to Bill and I, are not fascinating to the average person. When we talk about a unit conversion error, it means something to us. The average person thinks a unit conversion error is a botched sex change operation.
I've got a proposed unit.
And what's the proposed unit?
Oil company price gouging. Call them Dick Cheney's. Can we do that?
He did not advocate a candidate there, Trent.
No, so I didn't. I'm just saying, let's create a new unit.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
So units are important, but sometimes confusing. Can we say that? Particularly with regard to international units.
Absolutely.
Trent, we didn't get to your example, but admittedly, when you talk about megabytes in a hard drive.
Well, it's mostly like gigabytes. If it's really annoying because your computer measures it in base 2 and manufacturers measure in base 5, so... Or base 10, not base 5.
Right, so we live in a base 10 world.
Yeah, so if I go buy a 250 gigabyte hard drive, it's only going to show up as like 230 gigabytes on my computer.
Right, exactly. So a 1-0, the way you write it in base 2, is 2. We call that 10. Hence the joke. Did we ever tell this one joke? Mm-hmm. There are 10 types of people in the world. Those who understand binary and those who don't.
Ooh,
right, we should talk about this. This should be a new math show, because bases are something you people learn in the new math, and we all forgot anyway.
Yeah.
Anything else we need to know?
No. Well, I think, units are kind of an interesting thing, and the one about the Mars lander crashing in, they're important to know what they are.
They are important. Ask your doctor what units your cholesterol concentrate. It's a mass per volume or a moles per
and
volume.
And tell them, don't give me that stuff in English units, man. I want it in MKS or CGS.
Exactly.
Just tell them.
All right. Well, once again, despite the fact that we've killed the mood by picking a truly bizarre topic, we thank you for joining us here on Inside the Black Box. Unfortunately, our originally scheduled guest, Haskell Beckham, could not be with us. Mm-hmm. He was actually ill. He had a gallbladder.
Yeah. So we'll pick him up.
So hopefully he'll be back next week, either him or Larry Bottomley talking about analytical chemistry.
Yep.
Once again, thanks for listening to Inside the Black Box. Science, only funnier, here on WREK Atlanta.